Welcome to Creative Disturbance. Audio Labs.
Rencontre avec.
Rencontre avec.
Meeting.
Meeting.
Evelina Domnich.
Dimitri Gelfand.
Evelina and Dimitri, you are artists doing light installation and light and sound performance based on cutting-edge physics research. And you are part of a FIT project. So FIT is this European Union co-funded project that puts artists in residence into FET projects. FET are the future emerging technology research projects, and FIT is future emerging art and technology. Before we go into what you are doing within this FIT project, could you describe a little bit more precisely than what I did, what is your creation in general and what kind of work you are doing?
We're fascinated by the nature of light, and it was for that very reason that we understood quite early on in our practice that we had to penetrate the ivory towers of physics labs, and there was really no other way to truly examine this rather counterintuitive domain of quantum theory that is, this point in time, the best means of understanding the nature of light.
As artists, we would like to incite and engage human senses and hopefully human psyche and then curiosity. So multiple levels of excitation, but we start with the senses, and there is a huge contradiction between the findings of their, let's say, insights of 20th century science, starting from the quantum revolution and the notion of strangeness of time, space, and not having an absolute time and absolute space, and the basis of reality where we can see all the energy coming from into existence is absolutely non-recordable, non-fixable, and extremely counterintuitive. So we started on this very challenging path of trying to rescale our senses to become a little bit more sensitive to this kind of new understanding of nature and new understanding of the world, of the universe, as more astronomical distances and more plant scale is entering the realm of technology, of science, of philosophy. The art should not lag behind. So this is what is our intention in art.
You had a matchmaking meeting with a FET consortia, and you picked up a quantum simulation project. So could you explain what they are aiming at and why you picked up this specific consortia?
There were, as a matter of fact, a number of quantum research groups.
Five.
Yeah.
Together.
Yeah. So it was quite a luxury, but there was a rather specific reason why we started collaborating with RISC. I can give a little bit of background as to what a quantum simulator is. It's actually an idea that was seeded by Richard Feynman in a rather famous text where he talks about there being much more room at the bottom. So this was actually not only about quantum simulation, it was also considered to be the birth of the concept of nanoscience, of nanotechnology. A quantum simulator is it's based on the notion that if you want to recreate the dynamics of a quantum system, you cannot do so classically. you need to have a quantum system that reenacts the behavior of quantum mechanics. So this was considered to be the first and certainly essential step in developing a quantum computer. Before you can reach the level of computation, you first have to create this this system of simulation, this capacity for one system to represent another. And there are various means by which to do so. We, in particular, are interested in the way that it is being done with electric trapping of gases, of particles. We have, for quite some time, been working with different means of levitation, acoustic levitation, optical levitation as well, and the capacity to create what is known as a quadrupole trap, a Powell trap named after Wolfgang Powell, who actually won the Nobel Prize for this invention in the 80s. It opens the path to quantum computing on the one hand, because it allows you to control as precisely as possible, as is currently possible, various quantum behaviors such as entanglement, coherence, and it allows for particles to communicate with one another. That it is by means of this communication, communication that occurs far more quickly than any conventional, let's say, classical computer, that will supposedly lead to a far faster and more efficient means of computation. We ourselves are not particularly interested in the in taking measurements or in conducting computations, and actually that is something that may not even arise for the next decade. But the instruments that are used, namely, as I was saying before, this means of using an electric field for levitating matter, was something that we had already dreamt about before this matchmaking took place.
So this group, Rydberg Atom Simulation Group, is a very versatile group of scientists, more than 20 different labs all over Europe. And they have a few groups that are top world specialists on this TRAP technology, which for us is very important because it involves macroscopic scale. It involves a possibility of observations with an aided eye. And it's quite interesting that scientists never present results of their research as an immediate, let's say, slice of reality. No matter how you call it, experiment or raw data, they always present the results of their research in symbolic form, already formalized. So it is always a system that has been dramatically reduced. And when you design an experiment, you already orchestrate part of reality. So they call it context. Context is simply the devices there, you know, the experimental instruments that you build around an atom or whatever part of reality you study. So first they create the context, which is already a big reduction of the influences that exist in reality. Then they collect the data, then they process the data, and then they write the scientific article. So you can never experience what they write about in full, and you have to kind of reconstructed, like back reimagine it in your brain. And of course, only people who are trained to do that, who have their own experience in building experiments, in working with mathematical formula, are able to reconstruct the full picture of reality from these symbolical messages that are printed in science magazines. So we, although we look at the same experiments, we present them as operational, as an operational context.
Future, emerging art, and technology.
So if I understand well, you chose this RISC consortium because they are working on devices or machines or tools that echoes your own research and will allow you to propose an audience through an artwork. The context, as you explain, mm-hmm. of what the experiment is, the experiment itself, is that correct?
Absolutely. Or
at the basis of most of the experiments is the technology of an ion trap, where you have a kind of open electric field that traps individual ions or particles or atoms. So the way they explained it to us, it's you can roughly call it the second quantum revolution, what is happening right now in quantum physics. And all the thought experiments of Einstein and the actors of the first quantum revolution are finally becoming lab experiments. So what they only conceived of as possible is actually now is being done at the lab with the help of these pole traps. And we've been working with the topic of levitation and entrapment before, because as soon as you have a container, so our classical thinking is all about containers and walls and cages. So we, in order to control something, we trap it, we put it in a container, and this is how things are sent. Well, it is not like this in the universe. So how do you manipulate, yes, an atom? So the only way to do it is to hold it in the electric field, and this field keeps it in one place. So this traps allowed for mass spectrometry, so the most precise measurements of mass and other qualities of elementary particles. So, we are using them not for measuring mass, but for observing with the naked eye, not singular atoms, although we are conceiving of this project as a maybe post-feed development, because we are very seriously discussing it with the Museum of Science in München and with the some of the scientists at the Ryberg Simulation Group. But for now, we are working with 20 micron particles, biological particles, the spores of lycopodium, and also with man-made, same-size, hollow glass spheres that we ionize and levitate. And the reason we chose glass spheres, because they also trap light and they create this interesting, so they also add a layer of optical theater to this movement of the particles, because not only we show the real trap that is about 2 centimeters in diameter, so it is quite observable, but for our society of idolatry of giantism, that sounds like too small of an artwork. So we will create an optical projection of the trap that is much, much bigger and allows you to zoom in these interactions of trapped charged particles.
And I think you have already something almost ready.
We have two artworks currently in production. they are based on two different designs of Paul Trapp. So another very beautiful thing about Paul Trapps that they put together the realm of single charged particles with Maxwell electromagnetic equations and with Schrodinger field equations. So you kind of see all these theoretical realms coming together because you're also observing the electric field, the behavior of electricity, which is, I won't call it mysterious, but it's so complex that it's quite difficult to comprehend. And another fascinating topic, how does electric field around us and inside of our bodies, how do they work and how do they, what is their dance? So these two different artworks based on different configurations of electric field, which allows you to see completely different dance of charged particles. And in one, one of them will be called quantum lattice because you will see these lattice-like structures, and this is how they called in the research. And the other one is called ion hole because it's a ring. Here you enter this very beautiful and very interesting topology of electric fields too. And for one of the traps, we want to create the optical projection without recording. We want to do the whole process optically.
What you're going to create here is more installation works than performance work. Is that correct?
Oh yes.
And yes, in fact, it is much closer to create an installation with a kind of subject matter that we approach than a performance, because performance is much closer to the format of an experiment when the scientist is present, and if something goes wrong, you change something, or you kind of you always have the feedback of a scientist or an artist with the system. In an installation, the system is really becoming more autonomous. And there are very few scientific experiments that run for years, for example. And the measure of time plays a huge role. So in a way, when we run an installation, when we show an installation for 3 months, it's like an experiment that you run for a very long time, which sometimes scientists, they don't have such luxury, or maybe they do it, but then they select certain data, analyze it, and kind of compress it to a very, to a few seconds.
I would say that the average quantum physics experiment doesn't last for more than a few microseconds.
Would you agree if I say that your work has a strong phenomenological component within a field that is extremely abstract or considered as abstract because it deals with matter that is almost non-matter? It's so invisible and so complex that it's beyond the idea of matter, and that you're bringing into the realm of matter as everybody understands it?
The boundary also between the quantum world and the more, should we say, familiar, so-called classical domain is in many ways the deepest impetus behind our aesthetic investigations.
There is a whole range of format in art science creation, art science projects and collaboration. Why is a collaboration important for you within your artwork?
And over the years we have worked not only with various scientific researchers but also with quite a variety of other artists, sound artists, visual artists. It's quite similar, I would say, to the way in which scientific research is conducted in a collective manner, because of course it is possible to embrace these challenges individually, but we strongly believe that it is far more fruitful to do so in a collective manner.
So we just have visited the RISC conference, where it was at the presentation of the midterm research by all the groups. So there were not a single person except quantum physicists there. And then there were some of the, I would say, more brighter minds, like more amazing scientists there that are said, well, and that were referring to, let's say, the situation in Vienna in the beginning of the 20th century, where you had some amazing artists, poets, physicists, people working in philosophy, kind of rotating in the same circles and pushing this absolutely radical new understanding of the world. And the physicists themselves, they understand that when they are in their very closed community, they are kind of their side really focuses, because the subject matter is quite demanding. However, if you introduce artists into a situation, or I don't know, other people who, you know, we're just united by being human and facing the human challenges of being in the world, and this really helps them to take a more comprehensive view on the situation. And scientists, they need this interest from outside to go deeper into what they're doing. They need this dialogue to push to the next level. And at some point, it's very important to come together on a purely human level and to understand what does it mean today to be a human, when we're basically a geological force and control individual atoms and become, if not omnipotent and omniscient, but at least
omniscient,
we become extremely powerful, and then we don't have a very clear understanding who we are. Dmitry and I, we're not so much into writing. We really prefer non-symbolic communication, and we think that this is something that is becoming really underdeveloped in humans, and we definitely have the capacities to do that, to communicate beyond language. And this is also the way to communicate with other conscious creatures, organisms, systems on our planet. And this avenue of communication has been severely cut off in the last century. So we're really into non-symbolic communication.
There are very different models of artist residency. You have done others in other contexts. So I would like to know what is your approach and your take of what you consider an interesting model for you.
One of the most important experience that we got from all our collaborations with scientists, that scientists should be already in the beginning artistically engaged and appreciate the value of art. Otherwise, they will never open up to real free exchange. So that's why it is important that art is meaningful for many members of society, and then you can have these dialogues. Every human being, every member of our society has this time and space to be an active, creative, you know, to engage in the art life of the society. I think this is what fulfills you as a human being. This is what balances your mental state. This is what gives meaning to your existence. Because if we look at the universe, it has this very sublime beauty and order in all its workings. And if you are not trying to recreate or resonate with this tremendous, well, I don't know to call it harmony or inverse square law, or try to somehow mention it mathematically, but it is there. We feel it in there.
I'm convinced that the scientific imagination and artistic imagination are coming from the same source.
From the creative impetus of the universe itself.
I think there is a momentum now about the possibility to build up art-science collaboration. So the FIT residency has got a specific model and a specific constraint, which is the different time frames. So the scientific consortia of the FET project are over 3 or 4 years, whereas the FIT project, that is the artist in residence, is only about over 1 year. So we have two very different time frames here. So do you think it's fine, because it wouldn't make sense to stay longer within the scientific consortia to be able to produce the work and have an impact on the scientist? Or do you think that the time, both time frames should be the same, or should be something else?
Regardless of the time frame, it seems as though we have sparked a collaboration that is going to go on
at least for 4 years. Yes. Just on the scale of the FET project. The longer scale definitely will give the deeper results, the more interesting results. From our experience and the managerial perspective, just for us coming to the university and interacting with students, because a lot of the scientists, like more than half of the time what they do, they're teaching. So not only they are performing their experiments, they are also preparing the new generation of scientists. And when we enter this, so let's say education is extremely important thing for our society. So when we enter this domain of scientific labs, we also interact with students, and we also help to make this education process more versatile. And it really, I would say, it gives stronger impact on these younger souls that are very open and looking for ways to focus their activities. So this was incredibly gratifying and something so important that I don't want to overlook it. And it is kind of a side process. So we always have to see how we all take care of bringing up the new generation with kind of the right values, the right perspective. And it is very gratifying to see that younger scientists, they not only, you know, want to be good scientists, but they also question the social impact of science, the ethical issues. So this more complex picture, and this is extremely important. The education aspect has to be strongly embodied into these collaborations, because it gives a very strong payback.
Des pastilles, ear, à sucer pour l'oreille, candy.